That is a song, I Can Just See, the Apostle Paul and those in that upper room with him in Acts chapter 20 singing. If only it had been written then. But it was written, I believe, in the 1880s. But the message of that song, Till We Meet Again, because we're looking at the ministry of speaking and a farewell sermon from the Apostle Paul. He will never see these people again on earth. Acts chapter 20, verse 25, he tells those at Ephesus, this is later on, "Behold, I know that ye all, among whom I have gone preaching the kingdom of God, shall see my face no more." And so in Acts chapter 20, verses 1 through 12, we have Paul's speaking ministry. The rest of the chapter, verses 13 to 38, is Paul's defense of his ministry. But here's Paul's speaking ministry. And last week we saw that he had many, many ministries. One of those ministries was speaking, using his voice to communicate what he knew. And I made this statement, there is no such thing as a silent believer. In fact, there really is no such thing as a hermit believer. A believer who likes to just be all by himself and never go out with other people, never be with other Christians. I once met a believer who said, you know what, if I could just be all by myself and not have to be around other believers who are a bunch of hypocrites and wouldn't have to be with other believers who are this, that, and the other. And I said to him, that's not in the Bible. You'll not find that in the Bible. You will always need other believers. It's called the church. So there's no such thing as a silent believer. Jesus implied as much when he said, "But ye shall receive power after that the Holy Ghost has come upon you, and ye shall be witnesses unto me both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and in Samaria and unto the uttermost part of the earth." Now, if you didn't have a voice to go say something, why or how could you be witnesses to the uttermost part of the earth? Using your voice for the Lord is implied right there in Acts chapter 1 and verse 8, the theme of the entire book of Acts. So we are to use our voices under the power of the Holy Spirit, and your audience will vary. Your audience may be large, it may be hostile, perhaps that's your audience at work. Your audience may be very large. It may be small. It may be a family. It may be your family. It may be an audience that is intelligent but misguided, as the hearers were in the synagogues the Apostle Paul attended. Your audience may be intelligent but ignorant of the scriptures, as was Paul's audience there in Athens before the Athenian philosophers. Your audience may be believers who hopefully are eager to learn. I was just reading again this morning in Acts chapter 17 and verse 11, how the Berean Jews were more noble than the Jews in Thessalonica in that they searched the scriptures daily whether those things were so. There's an audience that's eager. Paul was never satisfied, though, to limit himself to one audience or to one mode of speaking, one style of speaking. He exhorted. He instructed. He conversed. And all three of those are found here in Acts chapter 20, verses 1 through 12. Let's read again those verses, and I'll give you the outline thus far and those three modes of speaking as we read. Acts 20, verse 1, "And after the uproar was ceased, Paul called unto him the disciples and embraced them, and departed for to go into Macedonia. And when he had gone over those parts and had given them much exhortation," that's my first point from last week. The speaking ministry of the Apostle Paul included much exhortation. Remember what exhortation is? It has to do with comfort, urging, appealing to the listener. "So when he had gone over those parts," verse 2, "and had given them much exhortation, he came into Greece. And there abode 3 months, and when the Jews laid wait for him as he was about to sail into Syria, he purposed to return through Macedonia. And there accompanied him into Asia Sopater of Berea, and of the Thessalonians Aristarchus and Secundus, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timotheus, and of Asia, Tychicus and Trophimus. These going before tarried for us at Troas. And we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came unto them to Troas in 5 days, where we abode 7 days. Now, verses 7 through 12 are going to be the 7 days that he's in Troas. Actually, it's the one last day he is in Troas, and you're going to find out in verse 7 what day of the week it was. And upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them. Here he is, using his voice again. And the word preached is going to be a different word, as I'm going to show you here in just a moment. Ready to depart on the morrow, and continued his speech until midnight. And there were many lights in the upper chamber where they were gathered together. And there sat in a window a certain young man named Eutychus, being fallen into a deep sleep. And as Paul was long preaching, he sunk down with sleep and fell down dead, or fell down from the third loft and was taken up dead. And Paul went down and fell on him and, embracing him, said, "Trouble not yourselves, for his life is in him." This is my second point. Paul's speaking ministry included much instruction, and I'll expand upon that in just a moment. Verse 11, when he therefore was come up again, this is the Apostle Paul going back up to the third loft, and had broken bread and eaten and talked a long while. This is the third thing. He conversed. Even till break of day, so he departed, and they brought the young man alive and were not a little comforted. Now, this is an interesting passage. This is a passage that many have preached, very rarely using it to talk about people who fall asleep in church. And yet, this is a service where a man fell asleep in church. And the results aren't good, folks. He fell from the third loft, the third story. And he was taken up dead. Now, that would get everybody else's attention, and I'll guarantee you for the rest of the night, these people were wide awake. But let's look into this just a little bit. We saw the much instruction in verses 7 through 10. Paul is preaching until midnight. This is a farewell service. He's ready to depart on the next day, on the morrow, it says. But I gave you these 2 points about that farewell service. These believers, we see the early church practicing something that we still practice today. And that is, they observed the Lord's Day. They weren't working on the Lord's Day. They were not doing other things on the Lord's Day. It was the Lord's Day. It was not their day. It was the Lord's Day. And on the Lord's Day, believers came together. You see that in verse 7. Folks, that's what true believers do. True believers come together. You also see that they came together on Sunday. That, folks, is what true believers do. So this is a farewell service in which they observed the Lord's Day. Secondly, you see, on the Lord's Day, they observed the Lord's Supper. They happened to do it on the Lord's Day. But the observance of the Lord's Supper can take place anytime when believers gather. There are times when we observe the Lord's Day. I like to observe it Easter week, the Wednesday before, close to the time when the Lord himself would have observed it with his disciples. They observed the Lord's Supper. Again, that's what true believers do. So there was this farewell service. Today we see that there was also a farewell sermon. Remember, Paul is ready to depart on the morrow. And there's 3 things about this farewell sermon that I want you to see. Number one, his sermon was instructional. Now, that word instructional gives you the idea of the word preached that you see there in verses 7 and again in verse 9. We do not know what Paul preached, but we do know how he preached. He preached instructively. He was instructing these believers. In fact, go back to chapter 19 of Acts. Look at verses 8 and 9, where the same word is used, the same word that is translated preached and preaching in verses 7 and 9 of chapter 20. Back in verses 8 and 9 of chapter 19, say this: he went into the synagogue, spoke boldly for the space of 3 months, disputing. Again, you look at verse 9 and you see the word disputing daily. That's the same word translated preached in chapter 20, verses 7 and 9. When you compare all the New Testament uses of that word translated disputing in chapter 19, translated preached in chapter 20, you're going to understand that the word has the idea of arguing, of debating. Have you ever been to an argument that got heated? Have you ever been involved in an argument? Have you ever been involved where you're trying to get a point across to somebody, you're trying to instruct them and they're not listening to you, so you begin to speak up a little bit more and you're trying to make sure they're understanding what you're saying? That's the idea. He's about to leave, folks. He's not going to see these people again. And he wants them to understand some things. Paul's preaching was instructional, characterized by arguments. I'm not saying he's arguing with these people because he's the only ones doing the speaking. But he is giving arguments for his doctrine. He is giving arguments for what he wants these people to understand. Arguments against false doctrine. Arguments against false practices. He is instructing them with arguments. So his preaching, his sermon was instructional. Number two, his sermon was prolonged. Again, we don't know what he preached, but now we know how long he preached. And there's three things in this passage that tell us that this sermon was long. I find this interesting. Go back to verse 7. When you see that it says that Paul preached, it is literally translated, it is the imperfect, and it means that Paul kept on preaching. Have you ever been in a sermon, in a message, in a service, where you think it's about time for the sermon to end, but the pastor just keeps on preaching? I see some smiles, some mocking, scornful smiles. Yeah, he just keeps on preaching. Man, he just kept on preaching. That's right here. Paul kept on preaching. Folks, he's ready to depart the next day. This is his last opportunity with these people. The second thing under the fact that his sermon was prolonged is found in verse 7. In verse 7 it says, again in verse 7, and continued his speech until midnight. And that is again in the imperfect tense, and it literally means he kept on prolonging the word. He kept on extending. I can see the apostle Paul saying, okay, now this is my last point. You ever heard, you know, you've heard preachers do this. And then they think of something else. This is his last opportunity. He's about to finish and he thinks of something else. Maybe it was around 9 o'clock where he thought, you know what, I'd better end this. And how late did it go? Midnight. 9 o'clock. Oh, okay, this will be my last point. And then another hour later on his last point, he thinks of something else. So he keeps on preaching. He continued his speech. My mom would do something like that. I always used to say that my mom's lectures prepared me for history of civilization. Because if I could sit through my mom's lectures, I could sit through history of civilization. She lectured. And I was thinking, you know, it's about time for her to end. I remember sitting in the kitchen on the farm in Monroe, Nebraska, and mom was lecturing us boys. And I thought, she's about done. She prolonged it and kept going, especially when she saw that we weren't necessarily listening very well. Then she prolonged it. So this was a continued speech. Then look at this in verse 9. This is the one you're thinking of anyway. When you see that Paul was long preaching. That's the same word, much, you see in verse 2. Much exhortation. Here it's much preaching. Folks, he had so much to say. So his sermon was prolonged. And he probably would have continued even past midnight. But then we see the third thing. Not only was his sermon instructional, prolonged, it was interrupted. It was interrupted. And what was it that interrupted Paul's long sermon? Somebody fell asleep. Now, typically that would not interrupt a message. Unless there's snoring involved, unless somebody falls out of their chair, whatever. But this was an interruption. And I like what Matthew Henry said. The following 2 points I get from Matthew Henry. He says, the Apostle Paul was interrupted by a young man's infirmity and a young man's calamity. Look at his infirmity. And you'll notice that what is mentioned there, that in verse 9, there sat in a window a certain young man named Eutychus, being fallen into a deep sleep. And as Paul was long preaching, he sunk down with sleep. But now there's also a verse that precedes this that tells us, gives us a little bit of a hint as to why this is happening. Look at verse 8. There were many lights in the upper chamber where they were gathered together. A couple of things about that, the comment that Luke makes there in verse 8. First of all, there were many people gathered together. What happens when you get into a crowd where people are right up against each other? What's the temperature like? Okay, so it was getting warm. And you know what it's like when it gets warm. That's why I like to, why it's good to keep things cool in here. People say, it's too cold in here. Well, it keeps you awake, hopefully. But here it is, they're getting warm. But the other thing is that the lights are mentioned. Now, think back. This is 2,000 years ago. When it says lights, what kind of lights would these have been? Well, they just went and flipped the switch on, right? No, wait, understand something. You're back in the ancient world. And they used to have these little lamps that you could carry in your hand. And it was a lamp that had a little wick that came out that was full of olive oil. And that wick would bring up the oil through the wick and you'd have this little flame on your lamp. That's not it. The word here is torches. So in this upper room are these torches, and there's many of them. Why does Luke happen to mention that? In the context of somebody falling asleep. Well, I find that interesting because I think it provides the cause of what happens later. So the torches are there in the upper story. How many stories are there? 3 stories. And so the gathering is up there on that third floor because we see in verse 10 that Paul goes down from that third floor to rescue or to help this young man who fell. Up there is Eutychus, who chose to sit in the window opening. Why? Well, he's a young man. It's crowded. Maybe he's giving a seat to somebody else. So there he is in the window. His infirmity was falling asleep. And I think the torches are mentioned because of the gases that those torches are emitting. He falls asleep. Now, maybe others were falling asleep too, but they were better at faking it. You know how you are when you fall asleep. And I've done this. I went to college where I worked till midnight, went to chapel the next day, and fought like crazy to stay awake because I went to bed at midnight, had to get up early to go to class, whatever. So maybe I got 5 hours of sleep and I am dead tired every day. And it's the nodding that, you know, constantly just going through the service, nodding like crazy. By the way, I need my fan on here, brother, a little bit faster. I'm getting warm. And I don't want to fall asleep. So here's these torches and he is nodding. And the progression is actually seen here. When you look here in verse 9, the present tense is used, whereas he is continually falling deeper and deeper into sleep. What Eutychus did physically, fall asleep, ended in tragedy. But that's not as bad as those in church physically wide awake, but asleep spiritually. And I want to make a point here. Oftentimes, somebody who does fall asleep in a service is asleep spiritually. But in more cases than not, that person's just tired or has a condition. But folks, think about those who are asleep spiritually. Three passages I want you to actually turn in your Bibles with me to go. You know what? You know why you should turn in your Bibles? Because it'll keep you awake. All right? Romans 13. Go with me to Romans 13. In verse 11, we read this. And that, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. Folks, this is not talking about the salvation the day you got saved. This is talking about the salvation when you are finally in heaven. The result of your salvation, and that is very near. The Apostle Paul writes this 1900 and some years ago. It is high time. It is high time to wake out of sleep. Let me take a survey here. How many of you, mostly those of us in the older generation, ever heard from our parents, it is high time for you to, anybody? Yeah, there's lots of you. I remember hearing that all the time from my mom and my dad. It is high time for you. That means it is urgent, it is time, and the time is high. Now is the time, and Paul is saying, for you believers to wake up. He's talking about spiritually. Even a believer can start falling asleep spiritually, backsliding, becoming apathetic, thinking that there's more to this world than just worshiping the Lord and serving Him and focusing on the things of this world and laying up treasures on this earth instead of in heaven. They're asleep. And it's high time, folks, that we wake up. The time is flying past. I read this last week where somebody said, we give politicians term limits. God has given you a term limit, and your term is about up. It's about to expire. It is high time to wake up. It is high time to make priorities out of the things of God and put very low on the priority list the things of this world. So Romans 13, 11, it is high time to awake out of sleep. Then 1 Corinthians chapter 15, please. In 1 Corinthians 15, 34, the Apostle Paul again is writing. And I wonder if he's not even thinking back to the time that Eutychus fell asleep when he writes some of these. Except that Corinthians was written earlier than that incident. 1 Corinthians 15:34, awake to righteousness and sin not. For some have not the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. There are so many professing Christians asleep to righteousness. When it comes to righteousness, they're asleep. Unbelievers are asleep regarding the welfare of their immortal soul. Have you ever just tried to witness to somebody? Tried to get them to understand that they're going to end up in hell? Tried to get them to understand that you're going to die one day? I'm going to die one day. Where are you going to go? And they're sound asleep. Oh, they're wide awake physically, but they're asleep to what you're telling them. Believers are asleep regarding the welfare of the souls of other people. Your wife, your mother, your child. Let's wake up to the welfare of immortal souls. Awake to righteousness and sin not. Some have not the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. It's time to wake up. And then I want you to see the admonition of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Having to do with Christians who are spiritually asleep. Of course, you know the rapture passage is found in 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 13 to 18. Paul follows up in chapter 5, but of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. He's right, talking about the times, the seasons, where we are. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. Ye are all the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for an helmet the hope of salvation. It is high time that we come out of the stupor, out of the sleep that so many believers are swooning in. It is time to wake up. Folks, do you not see the sign of the times? Do you not see what's happening around us? Then why is everything in this world a priority above the things of God? Why are we spending so much time on things that are going to matter no way when we stand before the Lord? He is standing at the door. He is ready to come, and he could come right now. Are you ready? Wake up spiritually. Wake up. Eutychus was asleep physically. And I think we can learn much from people who sleep in church. I'm not talking about physical, but I'm talking about spiritually. They hear the same voice, my voice each week, and it becomes so common that they don't really even hear. And they're asleep. That's the infirmity in this passage. The infirmity physically with Eutychus, it's the infirmity spiritually for a lot of Christians. But then we see in the same passage in Acts chapter 20, the calamity. Here's this young man, Eutychus, sitting in the third story window. By the way, had he not been sitting in the window, there would probably be no story to tell. But there's a story to tell. I remember my friend, Chuck Woodruff. Chuck Woodruff pastors a church in Apex, North Carolina. And Chuck and I traveled on the drama team together, and we were preparing to go out on a dry run. We called it a dry run, where we have trained all semester long. We have been doing our drama, and it was time for us to go to the first church there in the vicinity of the university and have a service. And we called it a dry run to see how things would go. Well, it was a busy weekend on campus because we had many visitors, and Chuck, being the nice guy that he is, sleeping on the bottom of the three-tier bunk, sleeping on the bottom, and that bunk was basically right on the floor, he decided, well, I'm going to give the visitor my bunk. And I'll take the bunk that nobody ever has. In fact, it's where most of the students stored their junk, the third bunk. And he climbed to the third bunk, and that's where he slept that night. Well, Chuck got up in the morning at 5:30 like he always does when his alarm goes off. He simply hears the alarm and rolls out of bed because he's right there on the floor. He's in a deep sleep. The alarm goes off and boom, he hits the floor. That's why Chuck came the next day with scabs all around his eye. He hit the carpet with his head. And we went out on our first dry run. And this is why I remember it, because Chuck was so beat up, having fallen asleep, not from the third story, but from the third bunk. And I think that well illustrates, to a point, what happens to this young man. Chuck didn't die. This guy did. Being fallen into a deep sleep, it says about Eutychus. The present tense describes the progressive action. You know the progressive action of falling asleep. You know, at the first, you're okay. And then you progress a little bit to, oh, maybe a yawn, and I just saw people yawn when I did that. And then you progress a little bit further to your eyes just kind of, you know. Well, wake up. Oh, that was a good point. I'm going to write that down. That was good. Yeah, and then pretty soon, you know, the pencil you're holding just kind of drops out of your hand and hits the floor, and you're out. That's really what's happening here, a progression in his sleep. It is Alexander White, who wrote on the characters, some of the New Testament characters, who observe that this Eutychus is the father of all as fall asleep during sermons. I said it was Spurgeon last week. But Alexander White says, Eutychus is the father of all of those who fall asleep in church. He is fighting to stay awake, but he lost the fight. He was taken up dead. Notice it doesn't say he was taken up as dead or for dead. He was taken up as dead. And who wrote the book of Acts? Luke. What is Luke's occupation? Doctor. Dr. Luke would not have been mistaken about this young man being taken up dead. He's dead. Paul descends from the upper room from three stories and comes down to where this young man is. Look at verse 10. And Paul went down. Paul descends. Fell on him. And embraced him. Takes him into his arms. And then he says something. Trouble not yourselves. Which literally means stop being in an uproar. Same word used in verse 1. The uproar was ceased. Now here's these believers, and they are in an uproar, and Paul basically says, stop it. Why? His life is in him. The word for life is soul. His soul has not departed. His soul is in him. Though dead, his soul had not departed. And the intention of Luke relating this incident is to relate a miracle. This calamity. Well, that brings us to the third mode of Paul's speaking. After this, he's done with his instructing. And he changes his style of speaking. We find it in verse 11. When he, that is Paul, therefore was come up again. So he ascends back up to the third loft and had broken bread and eaten and talked. How long? A long while. So here's the third point. Much conversation, much talking. Paul went up again and he leaves Eutychus unconscious but alive and ascends again to the third floor. Paul himself is setting the example of stop being in an uproar. And he goes back up as if nothing happens and he continues, and now he is having this conversation. But it's not until after they did what they first intended to do in verse 7. Remember back in verse 7, they came together to break bread. And now it's after midnight, they actually finally observe the Lord's Supper. After his preaching, they observe the Lord's Supper. And after that, Paul talked a long while, even till the break of day. Much conversation. Now the word talk there could have been a sermon by him, but it's a homily. You know what a homily is? You know what homiletics are, the art of preaching. This is a homily. In fact, that's where the word talk, where we get the word homily. A homily, according to the dictionary, is a sermon, especially one intended to edify a congregation on a practical matter and not intended to be a theological discourse. In fact, in other cases in the Bible, it's translated commune. Paul is here communing with these believers. Folks, they had just seen, they had just witnessed somebody fall three stories. No doubt heard the thud. And seen him taken up dead. Paul goes down, embraces him, looks up and says, quit the uproar. His life is in him. Comes back up and they start conversing. Talking. The Apostle Paul is communing with them. Paul exhorts, not only by what he says, but by what he does. Because you'll see the last part of verse 12, that the next time they see this young man, when Paul leaves in verse 11, they brought the young man alive and were not a little, what's that last word? Comforted. That's the word exhorted. And they were much exhorted. It's interesting that the Apostle Paul is able to provide comfort, not only in what he said, but in what he did. I challenged you last week about exhortation and using your voice to be an exhorter. Today, let me change that a little bit. Not change what I said, but add to it. You can exhort not just by what you say, but by what you do. As Paul did here. I'm not talking about you raising somebody from the dead, but I'm talking about you, by what you do, being a comfort, being an exhorter of other people. You say, well, how can I do that? One time I preached a sermon that had to do with the ministry of showing up. It was just a Wednesday night challenge, the ministry of showing up. And the ministry you have, being an encouragement, a comfort to others simply by showing up. Why is it, though, that we feel like, well, showing up, I just don't feel like it today because I have so much to do? Folks, do you realize there's a ministry in just being here? A ministry of exhortation. What an exhortation. What a comfort when a young man or a young woman does what's right because it's right. Isn't that encouraging to you, those of us who are older, when a young man does what's right? What about when the older people keep on doing right regardless of what the younger are doing? What about when you do what's right regardless of what your family's doing? What about when you do right regardless of what others are doing? You do what's right. That is a ministry of exhortation, a ministry of comfort. And I stress that because of the word used at the last part of verse 12 that matches the word given in verse 2, exhortation. We began this message with exhortation. I am ending this message with exhortation and the ministry of exhorting, encouraging, comforting other people. And it's not just in what you say, it's in what you do. Paul never planned to return to these areas again. And as far as we know, he never did. He never returned to Philippi, to Thessalonica, to Athens, to Corinth, to Troas. And that's why he had much exhortation for these people in Corinth. His much instruction and much conversation for these in Troas. As far as he is concerned, these are his last words to these people. At least in person. When, therefore, would be the next time he would see them if they were truly believers? He would see them in heaven. Folks, all of us constantly have some kind of an audience. Maybe one person or many. But it's an audience with whom you can practice much exhortation, much instruction, much conversation, communing together with them. And I want to close by reading Acts chapter 20, verse 25 again, and then two more verses after that. I know this is later on when Paul's at Ephesus, but he knows that his ministry with these elders at Ephesus is ending. And so I believe this could apply to those in Troas as well. He says in verse 25, "Now behold, I know that ye all among whom I have gone preaching the kingdom of God shall see my face no more." Now I want you to see their response in verses 37 and 38. "And they all wept sore and fell on Paul's neck and kissed him, sorrowing most of all for the words which he spake, that they should see his face no more." And so when I think of those verses, I think of the hymn that we sang this morning. God be with you till we meet again. I remember singing that hymn at Bob Jones University when it was right before Christmas vacation. And there in the amphitheater, all of the students would get together, we'd all hold hands, and we'd sing this hymn. And I remember the time when we had just sung it, and I was on staff and I was in public liaison, and a few hours later, I'm in my office, and we hear of a student's car wreck there on I-40 in Tennessee. And I forget how many students died. And we had just sung, "God be with you till we meet again." Well, we never saw them face to face again, but we do look forward to seeing them one day in heaven, if they were truly believers. We ought not to neglect our being together. Just saying, well, one day we'll see each other in heaven. Because you need the encouragement, and I need the encouragement that comes from us being together. The much exhortation. You need the much instruction. We need the much communing, the conversation, the talking a long while.